Oh, well, thanks, Tim, for inviting me. So I'm going to talk about constructing different models for the strange metal phase of correlated superconductors, which can reproduce some of the experimentally observed transport properties, and which are also exactly solvable in a controlled fashion in some large N limits. And yeah, these models are inspired by recent theoretical work on these kind of materials. To quick introduction of strange metals. So here's a phase diagram of a generic correlated electron superconductor. So when the material is undoped, it's an antiferromagnet, but then as you add dopants, you reach a region at low temperatures where there is superconductivity, and at a certain doping, an optimal doping, there is the TC for the superconductivity is the highest. But if you go above the TC in temperature, you find a metallic state that is quite unlike a familiar Fermi liquid metal. So the resistivity in this state scales linearly in temperature as opposed to T square in the Fermi liquid. It also has a specific heat in many materials that is not a Fermi liquid scaling. There's a log correction. So CV is T log T as opposed to T in a Fermi liquid. And also, the Wiedemann-Franz law is generically violated in the strange metals. So the ratio of the thermal conductivity to the product of temperature and electrical conductivity is not pi square over three. It's smaller than pi square over three. So that's also something which doesn't occur in a weakly interacting Fermi liquid. And other features is it has a resistivity that's linear in temperature over a very large range of temperatures, almost up to the melting point of the material. And this linear in T resistivity keeps increasing without any sign of saturation, even as it goes past the value of H over E square in the 2D material. And that H over E square is considered to be a sort of a limit called a Motyoff-Arago limit within a semi-classical quantum, semi-classical quasi-particle picture, because that's where the mean free path of the electrons becomes of the order of the lattice spacing, and then you can't have a mean free path any smaller than that. So within that picture, the resistivity would saturate at H over E square, but in these materials, it just keeps on going. So it indicates it's something quite different from the semi-classical quasi-particle picture. So in order to obtain a theoretical, like a field theoretic description of this state is not easy. People have tried for a long time, but there's not been any convincingly solvable model. This is due to the fact that if you try to write down a field theory of a Fermi surface coupled to some strongly interacting modes that destroy quasi-particles, the Fermi surface provides a large number of gapless modes at every point on the Fermi surface, and that causes various low energy singularities when trying to do field theoretic calculations that make them uncontrolled. And even if you could come up with a continuum field theoretic description that was perturbatively well controlled in some limit, it's not clear how that would explain the transport properties of the strange metal, because a translationally invariant theory in a continuum has infinite conductivity due to momentum conservation. So exciting a current involves exciting some momentum into a system, and then you can't dissipate that momentum. So you need some kind of inhomogeneity or disorder in the system. If you already take this hard field theoretic problem and add disorder on top of it, it becomes even harder to solve. So we need to find a new starting point in order to describe these states. So that new starting point in the stuff I'm doing is the famous Sachdev-Yerkes-Kitaev model, which has gotten a lot of attention of late. So this is a model that lives on a single quantum dot. It's at a point in space. So it's a 0+1 dimensional model. But that particular point has a very large number n of you can say flavors or orbitals. And you have a Hamiltonian, which has a quartic term that mixes the different flavors or orbitals together, but there is no quadratic term. And so this quartic fermion term also comes with a random coupling that depends on the different flavors being mixed together. And what turns out remarkably in the large N limit, where N is infinity, you can actually solve for many quantities in this model exactly. One of them is the fermion two-point function, Green's function for F. That is determined through a self-consistent Dyson equation, where the self-energy comes from this diagram. You have this random coupling at each vertex, and you have a disorder averaging that links these two to each other, and product of three Green's functions. And that is just this set of equations. This set of equations actually produces a very nice solution where the scaling of the Green's function with frequency is a power law, 1/√ frequency. So this is quite unconventional, and this is not something you would expect in a free fermion model which has quasi-particles, because there you would have a just 1/iomega and not a non-analytic power law function. So this is, you know, this model is clearly not something that can be reduced to free fermions in any basis, and that's been dealt with in many other works. So it is a strongly interacting non-Fermi liquid at a point for which you can exactly compute the Green's function. So we want to get to a non-Fermi liquid in that lives in some finite dimensional space, not on a point. So to do that, there has been the idea of taking SYK models and putting them on a lattice and then allowing fermions to hop between different SYK clusters on each side, on the sides. So the Hamiltonian for that just involves adding a hopping term that hops nearest neighbor clusters. But one can still look at the fermion correlation function and self-energy in a very similar way. It's again the same kind of diagram that you have to compute. So, except that since these couplings are no longer correlated between sites, what enters this graph here is the local Green's function in each site, which involves integrating over momentum. That's the modification to the equation on the previous slide. So this set of equations here has a remarkably rich set of physics. So one can first think about the situation where the interaction J is weak and hopping amplitude is very large. In that case, since you're dominated by hopping and with a weak interaction, this momentum integrated Green's function just corresponds to the average density of states. And if you look at the self-energy, it's a omega square or T square self-energy. So that is a Fermi liquid. And well, since the SYK coupling is random between sites, it's also a disordered model. And this self-energy actually translates to a momentum relaxation rate for transport. So you have a T square resistivity. And the Lorentz ratio is pi square over 3, which is the Wiedemann-Franz value. Then one can also look a somewhat different situation where the hopping is smaller in the interaction, but you're still at low temperatures. And there, pretty much the same thing applies, except that you have renormalized quasi-particles in a Fermi liquid instead of free fermions. But now there's a more interesting situation where the hopping is smaller than the interaction, but you go to high temperatures above a certain scale. And there what happens is now, since you're at a fairly high temperature, the fermion-Green's function approximately equals that of just an isolated SYK model, and you have this weak perturbation that couples isolated SYK dots. The Green's function has this 1 over square root frequency dependence that I showed you. So if you try to translate that to the conductivity, you use the Kubo formula, and this, since you are, we are at large N, there's only one diagram that contributes, which is the convolution of two Green's functions. So using the scaling form, one finds that the conductivity is 1 over temperature, or that the resistivity here is linear in T. However, since it comes with this factor J over T square, which is large. So this resistivity greatly exceeds the value H over E square, or what is known, the MIR value. So that seems to resemble the strange metal at high temperatures. And the Wiedemann-Frenz ratio is also less than pi square over 3. But however, if you saw the first slide, the strange metallic behavior is present at a very large range of temperatures, even going down to very low, nearly zero temperature. And that doesn't happen here, because once the temperature is smaller than this value, it goes back to being the Fermi liquid. So it's not a good model for low temperature linear in T, but it's all right for high temperature. So for the low temperature linear in T, one can think of a somewhat different picture, where instead of having this interaction that's just on site, you also had some interaction that exchanges different sites. And again, if you are at, if you just did this and you went looked at low temperatures, where you still have a Fermi liquid regime, but you can now think of adding a different kind of disorder to this model, where you say that like some dilute set of bonds are very weak. So you have some regions in the sample where you have essentially SYK dots here that are isolated. So there's no electron can hop directly onto these dots, but there's still an exchange interaction between electrons hopping around these dots and with that dot. So that exchange interaction leads to somewhat different self-energy, which convolves two Green's functions of one dot with just the Green's function of electron that is outside. And that leads to a self-energy frequency dependence that's omega log omega. And again, if you do a Kubo formula calculation, that this omega log omega self-energy gives you a temperature dependence of the resistivity that's linear in temperature. But however, the overall magnitude is smaller than H over E square. And there's also a constant offset to the resistivity, because by breaking these bonds, you're also creating some point-like defects. So this omega log omega frequency dependence, it just comes from the susceptibility. It's a convolution of two SYK Green's functions that has a very particular form. And that mathematical form is related to the theory of a marginal Fermi liquid, that phenomenological theory that was proposed many years ago. So yeah, well, this is a kind of a cartoon picture of a marginal Fermi liquid, but there's a model that's rigorously solvable and also gives you the marginal Fermi liquid, where you, instead of creating these defects in a lattice, what you do is you take a lattice of electron C with just hopping terms and you couple it to a separate lattice of SYK dots with this exchange coupling. So then the self energy of C again turns out to be exactly the same thing that I showed you before. It's temperature dependence comes from the susceptibility of these F SYK fermions. So that this does produce a marginal Fermi liquid. And even though it's a disordered model, you don't have to worry about weak localization phenomena at large N, because well, it turns out that, say, if you try to compute the weak localization corrections to the conductivity there, they are suppressed by the large N limit. So this is in the limit that large N is taken before the low energy limit, you get a marginal Fermi liquid down to very low temperatures with a linear anti-resistivity in this model. So now one can also ask, what happens to that to this guy in the presence of a magnetic field? And the reason I ask that question is there are interesting experiments on at least one strange metal candidate, which is this 122-doped barium nictide compound, in which applying a magnetic field perpendicular to the plane of the sample results in a very unusual behavior of the combined dependence of resistivity on magnetic field and temperature, that it's square root of temperature square plus field square. And that is basically indicated in this plot. That plot indicates that it's a scaling function of H over T, which you can see by pulling T out of the square root. So could this have something to do with a marginal Fermi liquid picture? So the nice thing about this marginal Fermi liquid model that I wrote down is that in the large N limit, you have to look at a very restricted set of diagrams to compute different kinds of correlation functions. And that also translates to the fact that you can write down an exact Boltzmann equation in linear response to some electric field in the presence of some magnetic field that is much smaller than one flux per unit cell. So for those of you familiar with Boltzmann equations, the structure of this equation is almost the same as what you would see in like Ashcroft and Merman solid state physics book. You have some collision rate on the right hand side, which is this dissipative part of the self energy, and you have a drift term, which is biased by the electric field, and rate of change of the distribution function. But there's an important difference, that because this is not a Fermi liquid with quasi-particles, this distribution is necessarily off-shell. So it depends separately on frequency and momentum, whereas the version you find for quasi-particle Fermi liquids, the frequency is just exactly the energy of the quasi-particle. So that is an important difference. But you can still solve this equation. And you can solve this equation and find out what the shift in the distribution function is and translate that to the conductivities. And you find these expressions for the longitudinal and Hall conductivities in this model. And because of the particular form, the marginal Fermi liquid form of the self energy, these expressions obey exactly these scaling forms, where they have some temperature and field dependence times some scaling function of B over T. So the important thing is that you're getting this B over T scaling from just the Lorentz force and orbital magnetotransport in a marginal Fermi liquid. So that is part of the story for the experimental data. However, if you also look at this, the resistivity in the experiment not only satisfies B over T scaling, but also at large fields, it's linear in the field. So that's this gamma is the square root, but if you look at low temperatures and large fields, it's linear in gamma, so it's linear in the field. So you want to also have this linear in field magnetoresistance at large fields, which doesn't come out of this. If you look at the resistance here as a function of field, it saturates at large fields. So there's an old semi-classical theory for how you could get linear in field magnetoresistance at high fields, and that is through a random resistor network where you consider a heterogeneous sample where the different regions are described by different local conductivity tensors, and then you just solve Ohm's law and Kirchhoff's law, except now that in a magnetic field, the local conductivity tensor has both a longitudinal and a Hall component. So well, you can put these equations on a computer and solve them. And what you'd find is that your sample is inhomogeneous. So if you contrast it to a homogeneous sample where if you apply electric field perpendicular to the plane, sorry, magnetic field perpendicular to the plane and electric field, what would happen is that the Lorentz force would cause a separation of charge on the boundaries of the sample, which cancels out any transverse electric field, and then you just don't have any Hall current. But here, due to the inhomogeneity, you cannot do that everywhere in the sample. You are going to have, like if you look at the current part, the current is going to flow transverse to the applied electric field in the x direction in some regions. So if you measure the resistivity of this thing, the local Hall resistivity ends up contributing to the global longitudinal resistivity. And at large fields, the local Hall resistivity is linear in field. So you're always going to add that in series. So you end up with linear magnetoresistance at large fields. And you can just take this picture and insert the fact that your local behavior here is that marginal Fermi liquid that I talked about, and you can have a marginal Fermi liquid with linear magnetoresistance at large field. And there's a simple toy model which can be solved using a mean field solution of Kirchhoff's laws, where you have, in a disordered sample, your regions are either of just two different types, where the local carrier density is either one value or the other. And that model actually gives you a square root t square plus b square resistivity. It's like what is seen in the experiment. So since these materials on which the experiments are done have considerable amounts of disorder, and especially macroscopic disorder, which would lead to this picture that the low carrier density fluctuates from one region to the other. This is not an implausible mechanism of getting this kind of behavior that they see in that material. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So yeah, exactly. So yeah. So all this lives inside one circle in this picture. So the length scale of this macroscopic disorder is much bigger than the lattice constant. Right.
The momentum dispersion already occurs within cluster.
Yes. Yeah. So in each cluster you have random coupling for the C fermions to the F fermions at each lattice site. And like since that coupling is disordered, that relaxes momentum. And it turns the calculations show that the transport self energy and just the quasi particle lifetime are basically the same. Okay, so that was one thing. Now the second part of this talk, where am I on time?
Like half an hour.
Thanks. Yeah, so the second part of this talk is try to is another design of a strange metal, which is very different from the designs that I just talked about. But I mean, it was inspired by a different picture, which, well, okay, so it's a bit of a long story, but what is seen in, like, if you look at whole dope cuprates, assume this diagram is now for whole dope cuprates, that at, if you take the antiferromagnet and dope a little bit away from it, you get the pseudo gap phase where the Fermi surface looks like having some small pockets. And that is kind of what you would expect if you take a Fermi surface that's reconstructed by long-range antiferromagnetism. But there is no antiferromagnetism that's measured in neutron scatter experiments, even though the Fermi surface is reconstructed. That's a bit of a mystery, but Subir Sachdev came up with this fascinating theory that if you take the spin density wave model, which has fermions coupled to some antiferromagnetic parameter in which you can potentially reconstruct the Fermi surface, and you instead assume that the electrons in that model are fractionalized into some gapped spinons that carry their spin and a gapless fermionic chargeons that carry the charge, then that description has a gauge redundancy. That gauge redundancy allows you to transform to a different reference frame at each point on the lattice. And in that transformed reference frame, you can still condense a rotated version of the antiferromagnetic order parameter. So the chargeons, which only see the effects in the transformed frame, look like they still have antiferromagnetism. So the chargeon Fermi surface is reconstructed like this. However, the observed antiferromagnetic order parameter involves undoing this rotation in each point of space. So it becomes very strongly fluctuating from point to point and averages to zero. So there will not be any observable antiferromagnetism. However, the electron spectral function is a convolution of some gap boson with a chargeon spectral function, which looks like this. So it ends up looking like a somewhat smeared out version of that, which looks like what is seen in the experiment. So that is this theory of the pseudo gap. But now one can also ask, what if you take that theory and move to the critical point where you destroy this rotated antiferromagnetic order, then what are you left with? Well, you're still left with the chargeons, but these chargeons, because they're not gauge invariant, they're coupled to some fluctuating gauge field. And that turns out to be an SU2 gapless gauge field here. So you have a Fermi surface of chargeons coupled to a fluctuating gauge field. And that's not a Landau Fermi liquid. In fact, we don't really know what the correct field theoretic description of that state is. That's called an SU2 algebraic charge liquid, but we don't know what that is, what the ground state is, and we don't know what its transport properties are. And okay, like condensing the rotated antiferromagnetic order parameter in order to go back to the pseudo gap also involves simultaneously Higgsing this SU2 gauge field down to a smaller subgroup like U1 or Z2, in which a lot of its fluctuations are destroyed. So this ends up being a Fermi surface of chargeons, which is not coupled to some strongly fluctuating gapless boson. So this is a Fermi liquid in the pseudo gap. Okay, so I took the inspiration from here to try to construct some toy model in the spirit of large N SYK models, where you have chargeons coupled to a gapless gauge field, and see what kind of non-Fermi liquid state that can realize. So, what I did in this paper was you consider again some model of clusters, and you have a large N number of these clusters, i, j, k, etc. and each cluster contains a large m orbital, number of orbitals, and the ratio m over n is fixed to be some order one parameter that you can tune. So you take the way the Hamiltonian acts is you take some point, some orbital in some cluster, and it can hop to any other orbital in any other cluster with some random matrix element. But there's also a fluctuating gauge link, the IAIJ, which is U1. It's not SU2, but okay. So this gauge field AIJ is dynamical. So these fermions are coupled to some dynamical gauge field. And unlike the SYK model, this model actually combines both hopping and interaction effects, because that model just had a pure 4 Fermi term, but this one does not. So one can do something very similar to the SYK model, is you take the large N limit and average over this random hopping Tij. And you can write down a disorder averaged action, keeping only the relevant terms which will turn out to be relevant in the low energy limit within this exponential. So in that situation, well, the disorder average action looks like this, and you also have you have some Maxwell terms for the AIJ that I did not show you. So if you want to, now since this is a large N action, it has a saddle point, and that saddle point is described by SYK-like Dyson equations, where the self-energy involves random hopping as well as interaction with AIJ, but the AIJ propagator is overdamped. It couples to polarization bubble of the fermions F. So that gives you this set of Dyson equations that have to be solved self-consistently. So this set of equations is a different kind of solution than the one in the SYK model. So the SYK model had a power law solution, and that is scale invariant in the infrared. But more than the power law, the SYK also had a certain kind of reparametrization symmetry of time, which corresponds to the group SL2R, which is not present in this model. So in this model, we find that the solution to these equations only has scale invariance, but not this extra SL2R symmetry of SYK. So one can write the equations this way, and if you try to solve it numerically, for instance, you find that this term in square bracket cancels, and you're left with this solution in imaginary time, or this in frequency. So it's a power law in frequency with some exponent x, and that exponent x can be determined by that parameter m over the order one parameter m over n. So it ranges from 0 to 1/2, and is given by this equation. It's like, it has a tunable exponent. And at finite temperature, we find that it obeys this scaling form. You can see over here where I look at the self-energy, which is 1 over the Green's function at low energies at different temperatures, and there's a scaling collapse at low energies. But this finite temperature function is not the same function you find in the SYK model, precisely because this SL2R symmetry is absent. And now, we can do more with this model. We can, instead of considering, you can add spatial structure by, say, you put this each cluster on a vertex of an n-dimensional hypercube, where n is large, and then you have nearest neighbor hoppings. But each cluster now still interacts with a large n number of nearest neighbors. And then it, again, the same And the same procedure of disorder averaging in the saddle point still goes through. But now, since the model has spatial structure, because it's on a hypercube in a large number of dimensions, you can think about applying electric field in some direction and looking at what the transport properties are. So another thing that you have to do in order to get a non-zero response to the electric field is you have to couple the electric field to a different charge than what the internal gauge field couples to. So you can do that, say, by just dividing the coupling to the internal gauge field into two different species with opposite charges, but the coupling to the external gauge field has the same charge for the two species. So that is actually a structure of a U1 algebraic charge liquid. So if you do all that, you find that you have a power law conductivity in temperature, where the exponent is given is 2x. It scales with it's just a function of temperature over the Hopping parameter. So it has a non-Fermi liquid transport behavior, but it's not a bad metal because you are at temperatures which are much lower than this parameter T, so the conductivity is large. Another thing that you can do in this model is, well, you can try to look at a transition from this non-Fermi liquid to some analog of a pseudo-gap phase, which doesn't have the strongly fluctuating gauge field. So the gauge field is gapped out. And you can consider this transition by adding charge two Higgs fields to the model. So you add a Higgs field that lives on each cluster, HI. That's a charge two field. So it has a gauge link with twice the charge as it hops between clusters. And the Higgs field has a Yukawa coupling with this charge two bilinear on each cluster. And this model still admits a large MN saddle point with a different set of Dyson equations. So if you look at the coefficient of H square, you can tune R so that you have a phase transition from a phase where H is condensed to a phase where H is not condensed. And in the phase where H gets condensed, the gauge field Aij gaps out, and then your fermions are no longer coupled to a gapless mode, and it becomes just a random Hopping model, which is not a non-Fermi liquid. It's a model with well-defined quasi-particles. So yeah, this is the phase diagram of the situation. You look at R and you can cross some critical value. So the first phase is where you don't condense H and you have everything I just talked about. And then if you condense H, you gap out Aij, you reduce your U1 gauge redundancy down to Z2. But the Z2 gauge field is gapped, so the coupling to the gap gauge field doesn't destroy quasi-particles. And the low energy density of states is not 1 over e to the x, but rather asymptotes to a constant. So it's reduced. The low energy density of states is reduced with respect to the non-Fermi liquid phase. So that's analog of a pseudo gap, but in the pseudo gap, part of the Fermi surface is gapped out. And then you have a reduced locus of gapless points. And at the large end, the transition behavior at large n is, well, H is function of the tuning parameter with just 1/2 exponents. So it's a mean field-like transition from a Fermi liquid to a non-Fermi liquid, but yeah, it's controlled and solvable. Yeah, so that brings me to my last slide. What's more can be done with these SYK like large N approaches? So one approach towards getting non-Fermi liquids is to couple Fermi surfaces to critical order parameters. So is there way to do that in with in a large N sense with random matrix elements between the fermions and the order parameters, then can you actually have some solvable version of a quantum critical transition from a strange metal to sort of like a pseudo cap or a Fermi liquid. And the other direction is when you have this model of charge-ons coupled to gauge fields that I talked about is essentially infinite dimensional because, well, each site had large N number of neighbors. And this somehow we converted to a 2+1 dimensional situation where you actually have a Fermi surface of fermions that has a Higgs transition to a pseudo gap phase and is still solvable in a controlled large N limit. And another feature in many of the transport experiments is that the linear anti-resistivity, if you try to naively translate it to a single particle scattering rate, then that scattering rate is kbt over h bar in an effective Drude picture. So is it possible to construct a model which gives the scattering rate across a wide range of temperatures on both sides of the h over e square MIR value? There are also interesting features in the optical conductivity of certain strange metals where it appears that there are crossover between different regimes, and the optical conductivity first increases as a function of frequency and then decreases. And the crossover is at the order of frequency comparable to temperature. So is it, and you construct non-Fermi liquid with crossovers between different scaling regimes as a function of energy that possibly give something like this. And finally, something that we are working on is trying to see if you take a much more realistic model, like a disordered Hubbard model, and do a extended Hartree-Fock calculation where you don't just keep the tadpole graph in the self energy, but you also include a loop corrections and self-consistent solution of those equations display local regions that behave as SYK models in a disordered Hubbard model. And maybe that's possibly describes the state of such a model within some energy window, probably not down to very low energies, but at least within some energy window. All right, yeah, that's the end of my talk.
So in this 2+1 dimensional, like charge on coupled to gauge fields.
Yeah.
So you're just looking at the transition between Fermi liquid pseudo gap, right?
Yeah.
Have you explored what happens to superconductivity there? So in this phase diagram you show there's clearly a superconducting dome.
Right. So I've not done that. I mean, okay, I've not, first of all, not constructed a solvable 2+1 dimensional version of charge on and gauge field. And I've not looked at the superconducting instability in the charge on gauge field model that I just talked about. But however, I did look at the superconducting instability in the very first model that I mentioned. So if you go all the way back to this model, where you just have some simple hopping between SYK clusters, and then this model has this incoherent metal phase at above some certain temperature. Now, if you want to look at the superconducting instability of this incoherent metal, you need to have a finite attractive interaction. Infinitesimal attractive interaction would mean that as you reduce temperature, it first goes back to the low energy Fermi liquid regime before becoming a superconductor. And it turns out then when you do this within the large N picture, you can like have a large N self-consistent solution of the superconducting transition. But as you and that strong coupling transition from the incoherent metal directly to the superconductor is a first order transition. So the superconducting gap onset suddenly at the transition temperature. That's a bit unusual, but I mean, there might be some other ways in which you can study superconducting transitions in this model. However, one feature that you do get in that scenario that I just talked about is that the ratio of the gap to the transition temperature, which in a BCS, in BCS theory is a very specific number. Delta over TC is like 1.76 or something. In this model, delta over the transition temperature can be made much bigger than that number. That's a feature that does seem to occur in like cuprates.
I have a question about your model with the gauge field.
Yeah.
So I think I missed something simple. Like, why do you need multiple clusters for that? Like, why can't you just have one cluster hopping coupled with the gauge field?
You mean some hopping within the cluster itself? That's.
Yeah, why do you need it? Like,
well, okay, so your question is basically, why do I need so many orbitals in each cluster?
Well, why can't you just introduce this hopping coupled with the gauge field within each cluster?
Yeah, but then it doesn't have a tractable large N limit. So an important thing is that in this model, like both this polarization bubble pi and the fermion self-energy are order one. But what if we did what you were talking about, then one of this one becomes order one over N, whereas that remains order one. So then in the large N limit, the fermion is just a trivial random matrix model. Although the photon has a non-trivial self-energy. So it's not a non-Fermi liquid. Yeah.
So, in connection to, say, this old Hubbard model, or Michael's model for cuprates,
yes.
Do you have some picture on how you relate this kind of dots, the cluster of, you need some large number of localized speed.
Right, so, okay, so, yeah, so, well, okay, one thing is that one point is, let's say the nictides, for instance, those are multiple orbitals per site, they're like the d orbitals of some transition metals. That's okay, that gives you like 5 or 10 orbitals per site. The cuprates are believed to have only one active orbital per site. So in that case, you'd like, in order to have some model which behaves like SYK locally, what you'd need is some rare region in a disordered Hubbard model where the hopping is weak. So you have like a bunch of sites, but the hopping between them is much smaller than what the hopping outside is. And there's only interactions between those sites.
You need all-to-all coupling within that region?
Yeah, so you'd need more than just on-site interaction. You need like you need like nearest neighbor, next nearest neighbor interactions as well. The range of those interactions will kind of play the role of having a large end. So there is a paper by Chen Keshu on this kind of thing where it realizes some SYK like limit where the large N is replaced with having infinite range interactions on some lattice model. The model is a square lattice and the hopping is nearest neighbor, but you have interactions that go beyond, can go up to infinite ranges. So that could be one possibility. Is the hopping correlated?
To realize those four fermions.
Oh, you're asking is like the interaction something like correlated hopping. Well, I think if the four Fermi term so for like the range set to like three or something, it decomposes into a spin interaction and density interaction, some combination of those two. But then for the nearest neighbors, but then if you start looking at larger distances, there are terms, which are not that simple, but they are all four Fermi terms. But yeah, there is decomposition into density and spin channels. It's not, yeah, it's not a pair hopping, but it's density, density, spin, spin kind of interaction.
Yeah, small one. So you presented like two different versions of what the strange metal is.
Yes.
How equivalent are they? Because so I'm asking because you showed the phase diagram of electron of whole dope cuprates, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you have electron dope cuprates, you don't know, you no longer have this pseudo gap phase. You actually have antiferromagnetic phase.
Yeah. So right? I mean, so this whole gauge theory construction is not inspired by the electron dope cuprates.
You want to explain the strange metallic phase of those.
Yeah.
If these two pictures are equivalent, isn't there something missing there? Or
no, these two pictures I never said were equivalent. They're just two different models of strange metals. So yeah, it could be a different model for the electron doped and hole doped.
Okay, well, it's like I'm sure.